joining us. More Palestinian civilians fall victim to Israel's attacks on Gaza, where health facilities are overrun with casualties caused by the resumed genocidal war. The regime's fresh attacks have killed at least 11 Palestinians since the early hours of the morning. The targeted areas included Jabalia in the north and a neighborhood near the southern city of Rafah. According to Gaza's health ministry, over 60 Palestinians were killed on Tuesday strikes alone. The death toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 now stands at over 50,140. Meanwhile, the UN humanitarian agency OCHA says Gaza's healthcare system is under immense strain, struggling to provide treatment for patients. And Israel is well known for its systematic killing of journalists in order to silence voices exposing atrocities against the Palestinian people. The regime has added another page to its dark history by assassinating Hossam Shaabat, a prominent journalist and activist in Gaza. His death has sent shockwave across the Palestinian community. Gada Ibrahim has details.
The Israeli regime has long record of intentionally targeting journalists, a tactic used to silence those exposing its war crimes and human rights violations. In the past 17 months, 208 journalists have been killed by Israeli occupation forces. Assassination of journalist Hossam Shaabat is the latest crime.
Hossam was wearing his press hamlet and vest committing to the safety and journalism standards. However, he was hit by an Israeli missile. Hossam was documenting the Israeli bombing and crimes against his people. That's why he got killed. Surely, as journalists, we appeal to the international community to stop the killing of the journalists.
Known for his relentless efforts to expose Israeli war crimes, genocide, and human rights abuses perpetrated against the Palestinian people, Shaabat's killing underscores a disturbing pattern of violence directed towards the press by the Israeli forces to mute any voice calling for justice.
The Israeli occupation deliberately targets the journalists in Gaza since the beginning of the war. Hossam and Mohamed Mansi were killed on the same day, mounting the journalists' death toll to 208. That is an additional proof that the Israeli regime does deliberately and systematically kill the journalists. Prior to his assassination, Hossam was threatened by the Israeli army.
I documented the horrors in northern Gaza minute by minute, determined to show the world the truth they tried to bury. I slept on pavements, in schools, in tents, anywhere I could. Each day was a battle for survival. I endured hunger for months, yet I never left my people's side. That were his last words on X. Shaabat's assassination is a stark reminder that the Israeli regime continues to be engaged in a genocidal campaign against the Palestinians, one that seeks not only to annihilate their bodies, but also to erase their voices. Gada Ibrahim, Gaza City.
A medical charity has sounded the alarm over the water crisis in Gaza, saying the remaining water system in the besieged strip will completely collapse if fuel supplies runs out. Doctors Without Water said the lack of access to safe water is already having dire consequences for Palestinian health. The MSF said the sheer number of children with skin condition is the result of Gaza's destruction and the blockade, adding that the kids are unable to bathe. It also said that such preventable skin diseases like scabies can lead to infection in severe cases. The Israeli military presses ahead with its incursion into towns and refugee camps in the occupied West Bank. In Beit Lahem, the regime's troops raided Palestinian homes and abducted several of their residents. They've also raided the Balata refugee camp near Nablus and several other camps across the territory. We were earlier joined by our Ramallah correspondent Naka Ahmed to get further details regarding the latest raids. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
The situation over here in the West Bank, as you have described, many incursions, many attacks, and the IOF is continuously moving forward, pushing more military force inside the West Bank. The cities of the West Bank last night was in extreme tensive last night in the area of Ash-Sharqawi in Jenin, where violent raids and clashes happened between the raiding IOF forces to the the area and Palestinian resistant fighters. This incursion has led to many arrests among the Palestinians, including Uday al-Bajawi, one of the leaders of the Jenin battalion and one of the most wanted Palestinian freedom fighter or resistant fighter over here in the West Bank. He has been persuaded for 3 years now. The IOF was looking for him and tracking him down for 3 years. Last night, unfortunately, he was captured by the IOF forces in the area of al-Bajawi after violent clashes between him and between the IOF forces in that area. Not only that was the unfortunate event in Jenin last night, but also that the IOF is now preparing themselves to demolish more than 90 homes inside Jenin's refugee camp.
We've been reporting Israel's detention of an Oscar-winning Palestinian filmmaker for over 24 hours after he was attacked by Israeli settlers and soldiers in the West Bank. The filmmaker Hamdan Belal now says that the goal of the attack was to kill him.
It was a very strong attack, and the goal was to kill. After I won the Oscar, I did not expect to be exposed to such attacks. I thought that after the Oscars, the attacks became more focused on us and a threat to our lives in the future. An Israeli settler turned around and hit me on the head with the first punch. Of course, he was hitting me all over my body, and there was also a soldier with him hitting me. There are army shifts that change. They change. We hear the sound and we know that someone is changing. They were talking about this guy who won the Oscar. I don't know Hebrew, but I hear my name Hamdan, and I understand that they are talking about the film.
Belal added that the regime's troopers then began threatening, brandishing weapon, and using foul language against him. Upon his release, Belal said he was kept blindfolded in Israeli detention. The Palestinian director was beaten and then detained in the village of Susiya on Monday. The Oscar-winning documentary named No Other Land, that he co-directed with several other filmmakers, explores the struggles of living under Israeli occupation. And a press conference has been held in the Russian capital, Moscow, on Tuesday. It was dedicated to the International Quds Day that will be marked this coming Friday in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Marina Kartova has been at the president's center. This report.
Iranian and Palestinian ambassadors to Russia have attended a press conference in Moscow, which was held ahead of International Quds Day. According to the Palestinian ambassador, five more European countries, including Spain, Belgium, Ireland, Norway, and Slovenia, have recently recognized the state of Palestine.
Many countries are already boycotting Israeli products, and Palestine is calling on other countries to follow suit. Some countries, such as Ireland, are taking a bold and decisive stance. We are seeing changes in the mood of European parliaments in Italy, Brussels, and elsewhere. Even in the US, there are shifts, although it will take time.
Nafal spoke of the need for a new world order in which Russia and China would play a more significant role.
We need a new world order based on justice and freedom. What has been happening in Gaza for 17 months is one-sided aggression. Where is the peace? Where is the international community? Where is freedom and justice? We call for actions that will lead to real change and justice for all.
Iran's ambassador to Moscow emphasized the importance of solidarity with the Palestinian people at a time when Israeli crimes against them have reached an unprecedented level. Kazem Jalali also said that the ongoing resistance in different areas of the West Asia region is spontaneous.
It was the occupation that shaped the resistance in the region. The West claim that resistance groups or proxies of Iran is being raised with the aim of erasing the resistance. As Iran's leader pointed out, using proxy for resistance groups is a completely incorrect term. Attributing this claim to our country is due to the anger of the Israeli regime.
International Quds Day is an annual event marked on the last Friday of the Muslim holy months of Ramadan. On this day, people hold rallies across the world in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people who live under Israeli occupation. This year's rallies are significant as Israel has intensified its aggression against Palestinians both in Gaza and the occupied West Bank.
Commemorating Al-Quds Day is even more important today as Israel pushes with its plot to kill or expel Palestinians and extend its occupation on the Gaza Strip. Al-Quds Day is a reminder for all freedom seekers of the world who stand against any oppressions to establish justice. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The Israeli military's incursion and deadly attack in Syria's Daraa province on Tuesday have forced Syrian residents there to leave their homes. A released video shows that women, children, and the elderly are among the Syrians living in the town of Koya. The displacement comes as Israeli artillery shelling killed at least 7 Syrian people in Koya. The attack took place after Israeli forces staged an incursion there. The incursion was met by resistance of the Syrian people. The Israeli military has then been carrying out air raids and ground incursion into Syria in an attempt to rob the country of its military capabilities. The number of the strikes has multiplied since the overthrow of Syria's former government in December and the takeover by the HTS militants. Yemeni armed forces have carried out fresh anti-US and anti-Israel operations as the Arab country remains the supporter of the Palestinian people among the ongoing Gaza genocide.
The missile, UAV, and the naval forces carried out a joint military operation targeting enemy warships in the Red Sea, led by the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman, from which the aggression against our country is launched.
Sari said the attacks on the U.S. warships was in response to the American aggression against Yemen. He said the Yemeni armed forces also struck Israeli military targets in the occupied Yafa area with a number of drones, adding that the operation successfully achieved its objectives. The spokesman reiterated that the attacks on Israeli targets will not come to an end until the aggression on Gaza stops and the siege of the territory is lifted. The operation comes as the U.S. military continues to pound areas across Yemen. According to Yemeni media, U.S. warplanes bombed the northwestern province of Saada for nearly 20 times in a matter of hours. The U.S. officials in Trump administration are still caught up in a chat leak scandal. U.S. National Security Advisor Matt Walsh has now taken responsibility for the leak that exposed sensitive military plans for bombing Yemen. Walsh called the leak embarrassing and admitted to the chat to creating the chat group himself on the Signal Messenger app. He also blamed Jeffrey Goldberg, a journalist who was accidentally invited to the chat group in which the war plans were discussed. Goldberg has said that the U.S. Defense Secretary posted the bombing plan shortly before the first wave of attacks against Yemen on March the 15th. The White House has tried to downplay the leak as a minor glitch. Democrat senators, however, have slammed the breach as a sloppy, careless, and urging intelligence leaders to address the risk to national security. And now to Turkey, where demonstrations against the detention of a former Istanbul mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, continues unabated as thousands return to the city streets. Thousands of university students flooded a major district in Istanbul, heading for the municipal headquarters. They demanded resignation of the government while waving flags and banners. People in nearby buildings bashed pots to show their solidarity with the protesters. The new demonstration came after a court in Istanbul jailed 7 journalists for covering the protest. Separately, thousands also rallied for the 8th straight night in a protest organized by İmamoğlu's Republican People's Party, or the CHP. The leader of the opposition party has called for mass rallies over the weekend to protest the arrest of İmamoğlu and demand open trials as well as call for early election. The call for Saturday rally comes as almost 1,500 people have already been arrested. İmamoğlu, a politician from the CHP, was seen as the main rival to the incumbent Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan for the next presidential election slated for 2028. Academic and political analyst Bruno believes that the imprisonment of Istanbul's mayor poses a significant political risk to the Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
İmamoğlu, the Istanbul mayor, he represents the CHP, he represents the civil elite of Kemalist, who has been in alliance, political alliance with the HDP. It is the umbrella of the, I would say, the left side of the Kurdish people inside of Turkey. And they are trying to build a bridge between center-left, social democrats, and social leaders. Average Turkish people, they do not anymore believe on the legal system. They understand that the legal system may be manipulated as far as Erdogan and their allies want to change it. CHP together with the ultra-right-wing nationalists, the MHP, which are the allies of the AK party of Erdogan, those two parties, they are the founders of modern Turkey. So the Erdogan's cabinet is putting in jail new leadership from the biggest party of the country from the last 100 years. It's a risk for those who are not in favor of Erdogan or those who are not in favor of the alliance between AK party, Erdogan's party, and the MHP party, because the MHP party represents the rival, the ultra-right wings, who come from the junta, military juntas, who has been done for coup d'etat against Turkish democracy on all over the 20th century.
That brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for staying tuned. Goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. Today, in terms of relations with the world outside our own society, the Iranian nation is faced with a vast front of power-hungry unbelievers or hypocrites. This is the current situation. We don't have problems with other nations. Nations are either brothers with each other, or if they aren't, they leave each other alone. It's the power-hungry who meddle in the affairs of countries and nations. Today, we are among those countries that face a broad front of such power-hungry people. How should we deal with them? The Quran contains guidance on how to deal with them. The Quran makes it clear when we should speak with them, when we should cooperate with them, when we should strike them in the mouth, and when we should draw the sword. All of these are clearly outlined in the Quran. Regarding social issues within the society, our relationships, you know that according to Islam, after monotheism, Islamic understanding, and being connected with God, the most important matter in the formation of an Islamic society is justice, social justice. After monotheism, the prophets didn't invite people to anything as much as they invited them to justice. We have problems in the area of justice, and the solution to this is in the Quran. In terms of our personal lives and our personal condition, we are afflicted with moral and spiritual diseases. Not just us, but all of the humanity today is suffering from these spiritual and moral ailments. People are afflicted with envy, stinginess, suspicion, laziness, pursuing desires, selfishness, and the tendency to prioritize their own interests over those of the society as a whole. These matters exist among us too, although we are an Islamic society. We have made some progress in certain areas, but at the same time, we also suffer from these afflictions. The remedy lies in the Quran.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Hi everyone, Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Scott Ritter will be with us in just a moment on just how foolish is it, how unwise is it for the Trump administration to be attacking Houthis and civilians in Yemen. Scott Ritter, welcome here, my dear friend. Before we talk about the attack on the Houthis and Yemen civilians over the weekend perpetrated by the Trump administration, I'd like your take on the back and forth and back and forth, Witkoff, Rubio, Trump, Putin, that's been going on. As I understand it from Alistair Crook, Secretary Rubio actually had Steve Witkoff deliver to President Putin a signed copy of the so-called ceasefire agreement signed by Marco Rubio and by Vladimir Zelensky. That does not strike me as appropriate or standard diplomacy, but this is something relatively new. What's your take on it?
Well, I, of course, can't confirm this reporting, so I don't know. You're right to point out that that would be a departure from diplomatic norms, because the implication is that they're trying to strong-arm Russia into accepting something that would be unacceptable for Russia. And I don't believe, if that tactic was used, that it would work. President Trump's trying to play a very weak hand right now. And the Russians have been, I think, extraordinarily gracious in not holding the president to account for the failures of diplomatic norm, for the failures of common sense, for the failures of decency. You know, the president, on the one hand, will articulate repeatedly how he understands that, you know, Russia didn't start this conflict. He understands how this conflict came about. It's about, you know, the expansion of NATO, which Russia took umbrage to. And the president said that Russia had every right. Then Marco Rubio turns around and says, rightly so, that this is a proxy war between the United States and Russia. I'll say that one more time. A proxy war between the United States and Russia. Ukraine is simply the tool for this. If you have that kind of comprehension, then why are you playing the game as if Ukraine has a say in anything that's going on here? Why are you paying attention to, you know, the Ukrainian, you know, positions that, you know, they must return the borders to 2014, 2022, that Russia must pay reparations? I mean, there's just an absolute inconsistency in the president's approach here. And while I don't want to predict the future, I will say that it will fail, because this is an existential issue for Russia. And this is amateur hour in the extreme to think that presenting a document signed by Marco Rubio and Volodymyr Zelensky is going to somehow twist the arm of a Russian president who's been at war for 3 years, who has taken the personal responsibility of the deaths of tens of thousands of his soldiers, who is the leader of his nation, is somehow going to throw that all away because Marco Rubio signed a damn piece of paper along with Zelensky. This is insanity. I'm surprised Witkoff went along with it, because
how can the Russians, as astute as Foreign Minister Lavrov and as astute and patient as President Putin is, how can the Russians look upon Rubio, Waltz, and Witkoff as honest brokers? We're not honest brokers. We're co-belligerents. We're the principal belligerents by instigating and provoking the war and paying for it.
Well, I think the difference, again, this is me speaking. I can't speak on behalf of the Russians, no matter how much the FBI thinks I do. When you look at the words of the senior Russians, they acknowledge that the Trump administration is seeking to move the relationship in a direction that the relationship should be in. That is one where diplomacy is reestablished, where diplomatic norms are recognized. And therefore, the Russians are able and willing to differentiate between the sins of the past and the actions of the present. And I think this is an accurate point. And no matter what we think of the Trump administration, good, bad, ugly, pretty, whatever, we do need to acknowledge that this is a distinct departure from past practice, that this is a different administration, that this administration wasn't in power in February of 2022, that this administration did not create the proxy conflict that's ongoing since February 2022, that this administration is not responsible for arming, for targeting, for directing the assaults undertaken by Ukraine against Russian territory, that this administration seeks. So the Russians are willing to overlook a lot of hiccups, stumbles, foibles, mistakes, because they think that this is the better direction to be headed in. But there's going to be only so much tolerance for incompetence. And at some point in time, if this incompetence seeks to strong arm Russia into doing something that's against Russian national interests, the Russians are going to say niet.
Very, very interesting and astute observation, Scott. Jumping to Israel, Netanyahu announced yesterday, Sunday, that on Wednesday he's going to fire the head of Shin Bet. Is there more here than meets the eye? Under Israeli law, according to the Israeli Attorney General, he can only be fired for cause, and Netanyahu has not articulated any cause. This is like firing the head of the FBI.
Yeah, the Shin Bet has several investigations underway against Netanyahu. There is, of course, the years-old corruption investigation that Netanyahu has been working very hard to shape the judicial system so that he would never stand trial. And then there are a series of ongoing investigations related to October 7th and Netanyahu's actions in the aftermath of the initiation of this conflict by Hamas, the failures of leadership that took place. But I think more critically is the one that hardly anybody's talking about. Seymour Hersh has written about it extensively, and that is the absolute violation of law and breach of national security used by Netanyahu in an effort to shape a very politicized argument about the hostages. It was causing him a tremendous amount of political harm to shape that argument in a way that was favorable to him, but in absolute departure from the facts. He misrepresented a document whose secrecy was such that it was kept locked up in a room. Nobody was supposed to acknowledge its existence. He not only revealed its existence, but took the contents of this document and deliberately misrepresented it to spin it as if Hamas was the one responsible for sabotaging a hostage release deal, when in fact it was him all along. And he is now under investigation for lying to the Israeli people and for violating national security by leaking a document he had no authority to leak. And the Shin Bet's the one that's investigating this. So literally has, I believe he has brought in the Shin Bet guys, they make this go away. And the Shin Bet guys say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm doing my job. And so Netanyahu's trying to fire him.
I guess there's no way to know what the political ramifications will be to this. According to Alistair Crook, the Israeli society is deeply divided between the Smotrich Ben-Gaviers, who believe that the Old Testament justifies their slaughter, and the more modern liberal Democrats, lowercase d, who believe in equal protection, equal rights, and a true democracy. I don't know how you bridge that gap. I really don't. I don't know how this is going to end.
Well, the Israeli president agrees with you, and Judge, this isn't a new problem. Prior to October 7th, 2023, there are hundreds of thousands of Israelis in the streets demanding the resignation of Netanyahu as he sought to change Israeli basic law so that he could take political control of the courts so that his corruption case would never go to trial. And, even reserve pilots said, we will never fly again. And the Israeli president came out and said that Israel is on the cusp of a real civil war, not a civil conflict, not civil unrest, a shooting civil war between the opponents of Netanyahu and the supporters of Netanyahu. That was before. And a whole lot's happened since then that has only further torn Israeli society apart. So Israel is literally a nation that has unbridgeable gaps, and the consequences of this will more than likely be some sort of civil conflict involving armed parties on either side, Jews killing Jews in the Holy Land.
Before I ask you about the Houthis, I want to read a portion of the president's tweet. It's way too long to read the entire thing, but there you can see it's President Donald Trump's tweet about ordering the United States military. The more incendiary stuff is at the end. To all Houthi terrorists, now this is in caps, your time is up and your attacks must stop starting today. If they don't, hell will rain down upon you like nothing you have ever seen before, exclamation point. To Iran, support for the Houthi terrorists must end immediately. Do not threaten the American people. Their president, who has received one of the largest mandates in presidential history or worldwide shipping lanes. If you do, beware, because America will hold you fully accountable and we won't be nice about it. All right, that's very Trumpian language. Can't you argue that the United States engaged in terrorism, Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth, by killing Yemen civilians over the weekend?
Well, not only can you argue that, that's a cognizable action in any court that would claim jurisdiction.
Give us the background and your understanding here.
Well, I mean, first of all, the American people need to know that the Houthi of Yemen have been in war with the America via proxy since 2014. The Saudi Arabian Air Force, using aircraft provided by the United States of America, dropping bombs provided by the United States of America, bombs targeted by the intelligence provided by the United States of America, have been pummeling Yemen for a decade. And Yemen hasn't blinked. The United States got involved in, participating in these attacks last year, for over a year now. We've been in a quasi war with the Houthi because the Houthi are very principled people, and they said we will not stand by idly while genocide is taking place. The Palestinian people of Gaza must be allowed access to humanitarian goods. The blockade must be lifted, and until which time those conditions are met, we will prevent Israeli shipping from transiting through the Red Sea into the port of Eilat. And they succeeded in shutting down the shipping. The port went bankrupt. The Israeli economy was devastated. Now, this is a Houthi action against the Israelis, and America stuck its nose in it. And then America said, no, you can't do this. You have to cease your blockade. And the Houthi said, stick it in your ear. And we started bombing them. Terrible bombs, according to Trump. I mean, my God, what? Because Donald Trump ordered a bomb, it blows up with greater explosive force than the bomb that was dropped under Biden. Trump is an idiot. I hate to say that, and my wife is going to be very mad at me for saying this, but this is the kind of stupidity that a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said, Mr. President, stop, cease and desist. The Secretary of Defense has to do an intervention and say, please don't do this. You are making us look stupid. You're putting us in a bad situation, and it's unbecoming of the commander-in-chief to speak in this fashion about conflict when American lives are on the line. Treat the Americans with respect, at least. Use words that impart the dignity of the service they are giving you instead of treating it like a childish video game. Mr. President, shut up, and that's what he needs to do. Shut up. If you're going to drop bombs, drop bombs. But quit pretending that because you're Donald Trump, the earth shakes greater because you dropped the damn bomb than somebody else. The bomb blows up, and you know who doesn't care? The Houthi. They don't give a damn, Mr. President. They're going to kick your ass just like they kicked everybody's ass because you can't follow through. All you can do is drop bombs, and your bombs won't stop them from firing missiles. And then you want to now threaten the Iranian people the same way. It isn't going to work, Mr. President, and what's going to happen are one of two things. One, you're going to look foolish because you're going to have to back down when your Secretary of Defense says, we can't escalate any further without putting 700,000 boots on the ground. That's a major invasion that will cause the entire region to blow up. Oil prices will spin out of control, and your economy will crash, and you're finished, Mr. President. You're done. Everything you're trying to do, the American people will not tolerate $120 oil because they can't economically. All the changes you're making are predicated upon a foundation of economic stability, which will not be here if you throw oil security, energy security out the window by going to war with Iran. Stop it. Or he will actually go to war, thinking that somehow American bombs ordered by Donald Trump take on some sort of angelic property and blow up with greater violence and more terror than any other bomb ever made. And then the Iranians will shut down the Strait of Hormuz, blow up American installations, destroy Israel, and invite an American nuclear retaliation. And boom, the man who thought he was going to get the Nobel Peace Prize will go down in history as the greatest warmonger in modern history.
So how foolish is it to bomb the Houthis? What conceivable military benefit is there, or is the only benefit this crazy, as you call it, idiotic boasting for which he is known?
This could have been solved the easiest way in the world. The president should have sent Steve Witkoff to Benjamin Netanyahu, punch Netanyahu in the nose, headbutt him in the face, put him in the chair, and say, lift the blockade against Gaza right now. You're done. You're finished. Stop the blockade. Get the humanitarian goods blowing back in. That's what should have happened. But no, we can't say no to the Israelis, apparently, or the president just isn't smart enough to realize the ramifications of what Netanyahu did, not realizing that the Houthi linked, the reason why the Houthi stopped firing their missiles last time is that the ceasefire came in as they demanded, and the humanitarian goods flow, and the Houthi were people of their word, and they said, we're done. But no, they allowed it to happen again. Mr. President, you can't bomb these people into submission. There's a video of a Houthi fighter going out to recover the wounded body of his friend. The man's wearing sandals. He's got his little dish dash on. Not body armor. He's not dressed like an American commando and all this kind of stuff. And he's running with his body through enemy fire. You see the bullets kicking all around him. They're trying to get, and he keeps running in the desert under fire with a body on his shoulders, and he recovers his friend. That's who we're fighting. We can make fun of them. We can use all the derogatory terms we want. They wear sandals. They do this. They do that. They do this. They're the toughest people in the world when it comes to fighting in that area of the world, and we are not going to beat them.
Who are they? What does Houthi mean? Is it the name of a human being, or is it a geographic location?
No, the Houthi, it's the name of a family that's head of a tribe that embraces an offshoot of the Shia Islamic faith. They are, you know, native to that area in the Arabian Peninsula. They actually, the territory that belongs to them crosses over into Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has been at war with the Houthi in one way or another for many, many decades. And they always lose. Every time they come in, they lose. Now, the Saudi Arabians drew an arbitrary line on the map. If they continue this fight with the Houthi, one of the reasons why they had to have their ceasefire is the Houthi said, hey, you keep wanting to do this, we'll just come and take our territory back, which means they're going to take the southern part of Saudi Arabia. And they were moving in that direction. They can't be beat. They can't be beat. These are the toughest people in the world when fighting on their own territory. But they're very insular. Their extreme loyalty to themselves. They're used to being treated as outsiders by the non-Houthi. But like I said, these people are very resilient. They haven't been beaten yet, and they're not going to be beaten.
Here's somebody who does not understand that, and he should. Cut number six.
What we can't ignore, and the reason why the president mentioned Iran, is because the Iranians have supported the Houthis. They provided them intelligence. They provided them guidance. They provided them weaponry. I mean, there's no way the Houthis, okay, the Houthis would have the ability to do this kind of thing unless they had support from Iran. And so this was a message to Iran. Don't keep supporting them, because then you will also be responsible for what they are doing in attacking Navy ships, in attacking global shipping.
Well, it's curious. Just a little. When I was a weapons inspector in Iraq, about halfway through, we'd always ask the Iraqis, do you have any, you know, missiles you haven't declared? And then it became apparent that they actually had an SS-21 Tochka, which is a short-range ballistic missile. But it had been provided by Yemen. And wait a minute. But I thought Yemen doesn't have any capabilities. Well, the Yemen provided the missile. They were experts in the missiles. Yemen had its own ballistic missile manufacturing capability. The Houthi, the Yemenis have scientists trained in Western universities. They've produced from scratch hypersonic missiles using their own calculations, their stuff. They may receive some assistance from the Iranians on guidance and control in terms of components that are incorporated. But no, I would say that it's a mistake to denigrate the Houthi. Just like when I have people talk to me about Iraq. I was in a conversation the other day with somebody. They said, well, clearly the Iraqis got all their support from abroad because they're not capable of doing this on their own. I said, you don't know anything about the Iraqis. They're extremely well-educated, capable engineers, some of the best in the world at what they do. And that's why they were able to accomplish what they accomplished. You denigrate the Houthi at your own risk. These are very sophisticated, educated, cultured people. And Marco Rubio would do well to go get advice, maybe sit down with somebody like Alistair Crook, who has experience in the region and can set him straight on this. And the other thing is, he needs to be careful about linking Iran and the Houthi together in a way that makes Iran culpable for what the Houthi do, because the United States provides a hell of a lot of weapons to a lot of people around the world who do a whole bunch of stuff with those weapons. And we open ourselves up to be treated in the same fashion.
So if Iran is morally and legally culpable for what the Houthis do, the United States is morally and legally culpable for what the Ukrainians do and for what the IDF does in its slaughter. Here's a Houthi spokesperson. Maybe it's an AI translation, but it's a legitimate translation. Maybe Secretary Rubio or somebody on his staff will listen. Chris?
The American enemy launched a blatant aggression against our country in the past hours, with more than 74 airstrikes targeting several areas in the governorates of Sana'a, Sada, Al-Baida, Hajja, Dama, Marib, and Al-Jawf. The American enemy committed a number of massacres, resulting in the martyrdom and injury of dozens in a preliminary toll. In response to this aggression, the armed forces, with the help of God Almighty, carried out a qualitative military operation. It targeted the American aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and its warships in the Northern Red Sea with 18 ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as a drone, in a joint operation carried out by the missile forces, the drone air force, and the naval forces.
Did the Houthis strike back at the aircraft carrier Harry Truman?
100%. Of course they did. They didn't succeed. The defensive capabilities of the carrier battle group were sufficient to shoot down these threats, but they struck back, and Judge, they're going to continue to strike back.
Why do we pick these fights, Scott?
Arrogance, ignorance. I mean, the two are the same. The arrogance, again, we could have prevented all of this if we had respected the legitimacy of the Houthi position, which is we are here as Arabs, as Muslims, defending our fellow Arabs and Muslims in Gaza from genocide. So please cease fire, get the humanitarian goods in. You know, they weren't asking for Israel to surrender. They weren't asking for anything unreasonable. They just said, stop the genocide against the people of Gaza. And when the genocide stopped, the Houthis stopped. And that should have been a clear signal to the president. The easiest way to keep the Houthi out of this conflict is to keep the humanitarian goods flowing into the civilian population of Gaza. Why the president allowed Netanyahu to do this? Because now we have a carrier battle group. I mean, come on, Elon Musk and Doge. I'd like you to do a cost comparison of how much it's going to cost us to go into this military conflict with the Houthi that we're not going to win versus telling Netanyahu to simply let the humanitarian goods in. I think you're going to find that we're going to lose billions, tens of billions, maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars over the course of this effort, and we're not going to win. And all we had to do is pick up the phone and pay whatever Ma Bell charges for a conversation between the president and Netanyahu, or God, send Steve Witkoff over, spend a couple thousand dollars on airfare and tell Netanyahu to cease and desist. You know, for a guy who believes in, balancing the budget, this was really the easiest thing in the world. But the arrogance, we're America, we dictate outcomes, people must listen to us, do what we say. And now we're trying to dictate to the Houthi, who don't give a damn. They don't care about being bombed because they've been bombed for a decade. If you don't think that these people know how to survive in bombing, then what are we going to do? Escalate? Let me tell you the other reality about the United States right now. We have no clue who or what we're bombing. Okay, these are mobile relocatable targets. We're going to hit sites that we have. We think there's something there. We're going to bomb them, but look what happened. We're killing civilians, innocent civilians, and our frustration is going to grow. This is a repeat of Desert Storm all over again during the counter-SCUD campaign that I played a very big role in. We didn't blow up a single target because we couldn't find them. We didn't know where they were, but we blew up a lot of buses. We blew up a lot of tents. We blew up a lot of trucks. We killed a whole bunch of innocent people in our frustration trying to stop a military problem we didn't understand. We don't understand the Houthi problem, and yet we're going to continue to escalate and bomb. According to Donald Trump, it's going to be worse than you've ever seen. All we're going to do is kill innocent civilians by the thousands, putting us on the same page in terms of acts of genocide that the Israelis are.
Did something happen recently that provoked this, or did Trump just wake up saying, let's conduct a bombing raid this afternoon?
I think no. The Houthi announced that they're going to resume firing missiles into against Israeli shipping because Israel had violated its its requirement to provide humanitarian goods to the citizens of Gaza. So the Houthi said, if Israel is going to starve the people of Gaza, then we will resume cutting off Israeli shipping through the Red Sea.
Scott Ritter, thank you, my dear friend.
Mother, don't cry for me, I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword, Palestine, forever Palestine. Children stones in the sky, they say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine, forever Palestine. Mother, don't worry when they come for us at night. Surely they'll be sorry when God puts them right. Tell me why they do it, what was done to them. Don't they know that God is with the oppressed and needy? He perished while the nations that rule through tyranny. Palestine, forever Palestine. Fighting for our lives, they say to their parents, we know that Palestine is our right. They say to their parents, we'll fight for what is right. They say not to worry, God is on our side. They say we'll die for Palestine, forever Palestine.
Film fiqh az ulum sharifiye islami.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat
is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. Please stay tuned. Why people use foul language when they become angry at each other? We must learn good behavior from Allah. Samiri was the name of a bad person who misguided the people when Moses was away from his community. When Moses was back and understood that Samiri misguided his people, he asked Allah for the harshest chastisements. However, Allah only exiled him to the deserts and did not kill him or curse him. Moses asked Allah about the reason for his kindness to Samiri. Allah told Moses, although Samiri is not a good person, however, our kindness to him is because of his three important features. We gave him a second chance because first, he is benevolent. Secondly, he is good-tempered. And thirdly, he never cut ties with his close relatives. Because of these three good behaviors, Allah did not chastise Samiri and gave him a second chance of living. This shows the kindness of Allah to even the enemies of his prophets. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. To find more about this program and our other programs, please visit our new website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Black and white.
Hablar del Líbano Discussing Lebanon means delving into a hub of conflicts where various positions clash.
Conviven y luchan entre sí las posiciones que hablan de
advocating for national liberation and social justice against those promoting subjugation and colonialism.
El Líbano contemporáneo es un país